You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King, from MassLive.com. I'm here with Sam Jam Packard, the great. I'm a little flustered right now. The Celtics just had a crazy ending, ridiculous ending, totally insane ending to pull off a 4-0 Western Conference road trip despite the whole world being injured. Al Horford joined the list of damaged bodies tonight, the long list of damaged bodies. Kyrie Irving has been out. Gordon Hayward's been out since opening night. Marcus Smart won't play again the rest of the regular season. Daniel Tice has been ruled out for the rest of the season. Everybody is injured, and yet the Celtics just keep winning. Tonight, Jaylen Brown with a game-winning three-pointer, 0.3 seconds left to finish off a wild comeback against the Utah Jazz. The Celtics went to a zone defense. We'll talk about that. They keep being resourceful. We'll talk about that. It should be a fun, fun podcast breaking down the madness of another Celtics win. Let's start with Jaylen Brown's game winner, Sam.
Amazing play call by Brad Stevens. Surprise, surprise. To basically, it looked like they were trying to do their best to get Gobert in motion, so they use a pick with his man, and then Semi immediately runs to the three-point line. Ended up with a wide-open shot for Jaylen, but also Rozier was wide open in the corner as well. It was just excellent execution from the Celtics. Basically down the stretch, Terry Rozier woke up, scored 11 points in the fourth quarter, but then they just had made some wild plays to be in this game when they really shouldn't have been. Like, the Jazz are fighting for their playoff lives and seeding, and they have a amazing defense, one of the second best defense in the league. The Celtics really shouldn't be able to score points or compete with them with this lineup. And for some reason, they're still winning basketball games. And still, like, you just knew the entire game that, like, they were going to keep it close, which is kind of just the MO of this team now.
Yeah, it has quickly become the MO. That last play, let's stay on the last play for a little while because I do feel like there's a lot to break down. Celtics put Semi Ojeleye on the court. Semi Ojeleye, he of being an offensive zero all season. He of the 29 or 30% three-point rate all season. And their plan...
He was feeling it tonight, baby. He had, what, 7 points before that? He had a catch-and-shoot three. He had a pull-up jumper and from the mid-range. I'd never seen Semi with a play of that much confidence.
Yeah, and so playing all the injuries may benefit him, may give him a little confidence finally for the first time all season. But it felt like the plan was all along to suck Rudy Gobert into the paint because they knew he would try to protect the rim and then space the ball out. And honestly, if you get a Semi Ojeleye wide open three, 30% of the time, you're going to win the game. So that's still a pretty decent look. And instead, the Jazz scrambled out to Ojeleye, who was just left wide alone by Gobert, who rightfully or wrongfully decided to cut off Shane Larkin at the rim. And the Jazz scrambled out to Ojeleye, left Jaylen Brown open, and Brown canned one. And it just seemed like a really smart play call by Brad Stevens to go five out, even though he doesn't really have five guys who can go five out, even though he doesn't have a stretch five anymore, even though Al Horford was out and Marcus Morris was out and all the guys they would typically use in the front court to stretch the court were out. Semi Ojeleye, man. They went to Semi Ojeleye, and then Jaylen Brown hit a huge, huge shot the Celtics just keep doing it. They're just pulling wins out of their buttocks.
Thanks, Forrest Gump. But it's the play before that where they had an amazing defensive stand. They got a 24-second violation. Or I think they forced a crazy Joe Ingles one-handed floater, but amazing block by I think it was by Tatum there. They just made really clutch plays down the stretch. There was like a brief 2 minutes of just like some real shitty late game execution, and then in the final 3 minutes they turned it on. Shane Larkin, like the man of what'd you say it was, like a 45-inch vertical leap, coming in and just like keeping the ball alive so Greg Monroe could eventually get the offensive rebound. Larkin also had great hands on the defensive ends, creating some Donovan Mitchell turnovers. The Celtics just, I don't know how they keep doing this, and because I don't have an answer, I'm just going to say it's Brad Stevens. Because he's the one who designed the play, because he decided to go to zone, it just feels like he constantly is putting the Celtics in the position to go out there and make plays. Now, the players deserve all the credit in the world for executing, but at this point, it doesn't make sense, and just kind of throwing up my shoulders and going, "Oh, Brad Stevens," feels like the thing I have the most confidence in.
I do think saying that kind of it overlooks the fact that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are still great, great talents playing great basketball, and Terry Rozier has averaged 19-6-5 since joining the starting lineup, and up and down the Celtics roster, really. Almost everywhere, there are just really good defensive players. And obviously, part of that is Stevens. Part of that is he has helped these rookies learn the NBA game. He has put these rookies in position to defend. But they do have a lot of talented, capable defenders. And
yo, Brad Stevens pulled out a 2-3 zone with Aaron Baines on one of the wings tonight. He deserves some of the credit for being able to play that card.
That was a card I did not anticipate.
No one did.
They literally went to a Baines, Monroe, Ogile front court, which is just ludicrous. Like, totally ludicrous. Just a trio that really should never see the court. And it's funny because when they played the Raptors, I think they threw out like a Tice Baines zone at the end of the game. And Stevens kind of half-jokingly said at the end of the game, like, at least we saw we could do that zone with two centers. It was like, oh, yeah, okay, Brad, like, you're a lunatic, man. And then fast forward a month or so later, and suddenly he has Baines and Monroe and Ogile in the front court, and Baines is chasing guys at the three-point arc in this zone, and the Jazz have no idea what to do. It's weird how NBA teams that can react to anything you throw at them defensively, that react to double teams, and they react to icing the pick and roll, they react to hedging the pick and roll, they react to whatever you throw at them. Then you throw a zone out there, and a lot of the times guys are like, what are we supposed to do right now? They look like young kids again, like totally unsure of themselves, totally hesitant. And that was kind of how the Jazz went. They didn't seem ever comfortable with what to do against the Celtic zone. And it's just, you don't see a lot of zone, I think. And you don't practice a lot against the zone. And you don't anticipate that one night Aaron Baines and Greg Monroe are going to be together playing a 2-3 zone. And that zone, it really changed the game up. And it really hurt the Jazz. The Celtics, what were they down? They got down 8. And then they threw the zone right back at the Jazz, and that switched the game up right away, and it let the Celtics come back. Before we move on, I do want to note that Shane Larkin was a plus 25 in his minutes. Plus 25 in a game the Celtics won by 3. So shout out.
He is the most annoying, pesky motherfucker, like, to step on the court. He's like, even just like when they're coming down with rebounds, he's like always swiping at the ball. He's just getting up in everyone's business, getting in their space, as Brad likes to say. Him and Terry at the top of that 2-3 zone is like two of the most tenacious defenders the Celtics have. It's funny how like effective it was. You think the Jazz would just like flood the court with as many shooters as possible. I'm actually kind of surprised how little minutes Swedish Larry Bird, Jonas Jerebko got tonight. But then you see they tried to go small and put Jay Crowder at the four, and then you said Aaron Baines just like dominate him in the post. The two center zone is something that there's no way to counter it, man. It's some guru stuff.
It reminded me of like when Kevin Garnett used to play alongside Racho Nesterovic, man. like the wild days. Not that either Baines or Monroe or Kevin Garnett, but just back in the days when you used to play multiple 7-footers alongside each other. It was a wild decision. And I don't know if
it was necessary though, because Donovan Mitchell in that third quarter was just dominating. Like, they're just showing right now on Comcast or NBC Sports him blowing by Gershon Yabusele. And for the third quarter there, when the Jazz, they won that quarter, I think it was like 32 to 19, they dominated. So they needed to do something, because otherwise the Celtics defense was not working.
Yeah, and the Celtics, I mean, they shot the crap out of the ball. 12 for 21 from deep. Jaylen Brown was 3 for 3. Jason Tatum was 2 for 3. Shane Larkin was 2 for 4. Rozier snapped out of a woeful start to hit three big ones in the fourth quarter, including one where he was just dancing and then just hit
it. That one was so cool.
Yeah, that was...
That was sauce-tastic.
That was definitely sauce-tastic. another sauce-tastic play I want to bring up, the Jaylen Brown lefty floater. That was, I thought, the play of the game. Like, over the top of Rudy Gobert, lefty floater.
Was he on the wrong leg too?
I don't remember.
I saw you and former GM David Cavs GM David Griffin going a little tweet back and forth. Just two basketball minds chopping it up.
Yeah, one of those basketball minds is a little brighter than the other. The one who won.
I know the kid's a genius. The kid's a genius.
I would say the one who won an NBA championship is a little brighter than the kid. But yeah, that was a hell of a finish. It's just another resourceful game from the Celtics. Abdul Nader, I thought he played his best minutes in.
He had a run there in the second quarter where they made their little bit of a comeback, where his 6 points were very key. I picked the pocket of Donovan Mitchell. He made a bunch of other silly Abdul Nader plays and still had two turnovers and was a -4, but there was that run there where he was very important. His offense and just his constant attack was how greatly helped the Celtics.
Yeah, and the Celtics, they ended up with 18 turnovers. It was not always a crisp offensive game. You couldn't expect it to be, though. The Jazz have, other than the Celtics, the best defense in the league. And since Gobert has come back, they've had by far the best defense in the league. So just a really impressive. Like, this is one the Jazz needed for A, playoff positioning, B, maybe to get into the playoffs. And the Celtics with Yabu starting and Ojale playing 32 minutes and
Larkin playing 34. Larkin played more minutes than anyone else on the Celtics. That's wild.
Yeah, and they just Celtics just
he had 9 boards. How the hell did Shane Larkin get 9 rebounds?
Because he's got bunnies, yo.
He can seriously jump out the gym. It's wild. He should be in a dunk contest. He'd win it Nate Robinson style.
The man's got bunnies, yo. So yeah, and now a 4-0 road trip. The hopes of getting the number one seed are really slim, but somehow they're still alive with 2 games left against the Toronto Raptors. Cleveland, because of this 4-0 road trip, almost has no chance of catching the Celtics for number 2 seed.
The magic number is literally 1. 1 loss by Cleveland or 1 win by the Celtics, and they have clinched the 2 seed.
Yeah, so this road trip was just special. I don't know what it means long term. I don't know if it means anything long term that Semi Ojeleye can have a game-winning assist, and Shane Larkin can help you win a game, and Yabu can start and you can win a game, and Marcus Morris can be a featured guy and you can win games. I don't know how much all that means long term, but it's entertaining to watch in the meantime. Like,
yeah, it made this game a whole lot more meaningful. I mean, if the starters were in, it would just kind of be like a boring game just for positioning. But the fact that the Celtics were able to run out this lineup without Marcus Morris, without Al Horford, without all the other guys, and still be competitive, hey, it's a reason we're still up past midnight and have all this energy. It's just like a fun for them to run it out there. And Yabu, have to give him credit for a very subtle and tasteful dab in the first quarter after he made his three. I thought it was well done. He read the moment perfectly.
He did read the moment perfectly. Another thing I want to point out, Brad Stevens' sideline interview at the end of the first quarter, which was brilliant. It was – so Jeff Van Gundy asked him with nobody, how do you – with basically nobody left on your team, with all your regulars injured, how do you counteract Rudy Gobert, who was such a factor in the first quarter? And Brad totally sarcastically said, I think we should just keep driving right at him and just challenge him at the rim time after time. I think we're handling it perfectly. And it was so funny because Gobert dominated that first quarter. He was an absolute stud in that first quarter. And then as the game went on, the Celtics kind of took him out of what he wanted to do and kind of took advantage a little bit. I don't want to say totally took advantage, but they countered and they stopped challenging at the rim and they started drawing him to the rim and kicking out and finding other things. And the final play was a perfect example of that, where Gobert was sucked in to the paint while Ojale curled out to the three-point arc. And that sent the Jazz into a scramble mode, and they never recovered. And Jaylen Brown hit the three, and the Celtics won again. I do want to point out Jay Crowder. It's fun to see him kind of rediscover the joy again. I think when he was in Cleveland, it seemed like he was joyless. Like he wasn't having fun playing basketball. With the Jazz, he's back to kind of doing his thing a little bit. And I think that's been a good fit for him. He hasn't rediscovered the shooting stroke totally yet, but he's playing much better basketball in Utah both ways than he did in Cleveland. So it was fun to see him. I was hoping to see a Jarebko skyhook. He almost did one with the left hand, but I don't think I would consider it a skyhook quite. But you saw the Celtics. They kind of took advantage of Ricky Rubio at times.
They let Rubio just – sometimes with the zone, their entire strategy was just like, let's try and get Rubio to shoot the ball.
Yeah, and
it worked for them because Rubio is 4 of 14, 1 from 6 from three-point land. And the first one came in the first minute, and then he just didn't hit one the rest of the game. But it definitely felt like basically anyone but Rubio were not going to let get the shot. But if Rubio wants to take it, good luck to him.
Yeah, exactly. And he tried to test him. He took some of those shots, and Celtics kind of took advantage of that. Like you said, 4 for 14. Donovan Mitchell thought he was kind of a non-factor in the first half. Came alive in the third quarter. Didn't really hurt the Celtics down the stretch. Nobody hurt the Celtics down the stretch. They went on a huge run to end the fourth quarter. It was just another wild win, man.
Okay, it sparked a huge debate about Coach of the Year and Brad Stevens versus Dwayne Casey. And I know me and John talked about this the other night. And clearly, with me, I'm not the most objective of people here because I'm a proud member of the Church of Brad Stevens. So you, Jay King, member of the media, who do you think the Coach of the Year should be?
I still think...
You say it, man. You say Dwayne Casey. I know you want to.
I've said Casey before, and I know a lot of people. I've seen a lot of people in the Celtics blogosphere, or Twitter sphere, tweet things like, "Oh yeah, Casey should get it because he was so bad in the past." And it's not about that. Like, Casey was good in the past. The Raptors have been very good. They've been near the top of the East for a long time. I think the challenge for Casey was very different than the challenge for Brad Stevens. He saw that they couldn't go any further in the playoffs the way they had been playing and decided we need to change the culture. We need to change the way we play. And he's done that. And so I think he deserves a lot of credit. If you look at their bench, it's a lot of guys who are like total no-names, or at least were total no-names coming into the season.
Well, they have your favorite player in the entire league, Fred VanVleet, so I don't think Casey deserves that much credit.
Fred VanVleet is my brother, but Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright, like Jakob Poeltl, Pascal Siakam. These are not guys that are household names by any stretch, and that's been one of the best units in the NBA all season, their second unit. So I think Casey deserves a ton of credit. I think anyone bashing Dwayne Casey is stupid. I think he deserves all the praise he's gotten for changing things there. And I think Brad's done a special job too. He's had a totally different challenge. Only four guys back. Had to bring Kyrie into things. Had to adjust once Gordon Hayward went down. Now has had to deal with one of the most absurd stretch of injuries the world has ever seen. And I think I'd rather have Brad Stevens as my head coach than Dwayne Casey. But I think when you look at the body of work, you could give it to either guy and it would be fine. And I've always said this about the coach of the year, and this is why I don't have a strong opinion on this. I've always said this about the coach of the year. NBA coaches, so many of them are really good. You could give it to Mike D'Antoni. You could give it to Greg Popovich any single year. You'd
probably just give it to Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
The Warriors are still pretty good this year. You're right. It's very hard to single out one person. It's kind of an absurd idea for an award. I guess all the awards are kind of an absurd notion just to try and single out one guy. But you're right. Like, it's very hard, one, just to quantify how much impact a coach actually has on his team and on winning, because, and like we said this earlier in the podcast, like, it's still up to the players to go out there and execute and make the plays. But you're right, Dwayne Casey has a very thorough argument and a resume for why he would be coach of the year. I feel like most of my argument for Brad Stevens, you mentioned it a bunch, but some of it's just like his resume over the past 4 or 5 years has been crazy impressive of what he's been able to like turn. He turned, like, it goes back to Jordan Crawford being Eastern Conference Player of the Week. His ability to just like squeeze everything out of players like Abdel Nader, like Semi Ojeleye, like having Yabu start tonight. It just feels like there's a reason why the Celtics basically beat the Portland Trail Blazers, with them being like one of the hottest teams in the league, and were able to go into Utah and pull out a win and keep pulling the wins out of their asses. It just feels like Stevens deserves some sort of credit for that. I don't know if he's won for winning awards. I don't know if he would handle that well, because he would probably not like it. But you can't go wrong either way. And so I'm being completely biased and going to say that I think Brad Stevens should win it. I'll put my hand up and say I'm biased on this one.
There should be an award for any man who can put Aaron Baines and Greg Monroe on the court at the same time and have that tactic succeed. So
you should get an award just for creativity. I mean, who? No one would think that.
Yeah. I
mean, but he tried the two center zone at a game in Toronto 7 months ago, and he thought, time to go back to that again.
Yeah.
What is that? That's an insane person's move.
I mean, he saw it in Toronto, man. It worked. It worked in garbage time in Toronto. So of course he had to pull it out a month later against one of the hottest teams in the NBA. We keep saying that about the Celtics opponents, but everybody they've played lately.
The Celtics are the hottest team in the NBA right now.
I mean, I feel like if you've knocked off three of the hottest teams in the NBA, you are therefore
you should have the throne.
The hottest team in the NBA, no matter how many guys on your team are just dead or injured.
It's wild. I mean, do you think Morris or Horford are even going to play? How important does this Toronto game become on Saturday with, like, I guess a better chance at the one seed, but you still have all these crazy injuries? Or you just compete with the same guys that you have and hope that it's good enough to get it done, because it has been for the past five games?
Yeah, just keep throwing them out there, man. Just I suspect Horford probably won't be out too long. I doubt that'll be a long-term injury. So maybe he'll be back. Marcus Morris, maybe he'll be back. So maybe they'll have like some other guys back.
Who knows at this point?
I mean, who knows? Maybe like three or four more guys got injured tonight that we don't know about yet. That's always a possibility with these Celtics. But just another gritty, wild win. And they just keep doing it, man. Playing Yabu and key fourth quarter minutes. playing Ojale for offense in the final possession. I don't think I'll ever get over that one. But it was the right call, and it worked. And that's how it goes. Celtics win again. Celtics topple the Jazz 97-94. Whew. We appreciate you joining us for this post-game podcast. For anyone who doesn't listen to us regularly, you're stupid. But search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcast, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. Subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. We are the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast. We are the greatest Celtics podcast ever created. I'm Jay King from MassLive.com. He is Sam Jam Packer the Great. And we are done. That's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On podcast.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales. Locked On Celtics. Millie.